And back with you after the All-Star break, another edition of Tony Talk with Tony La Russa right here on Scoops with DannyMac.com. Our weekly visits are presented by Victory Men's Health, Triad Bank, Be the Match, Marie Davila Senior Living, and Greenville University. As always, we remind you to subscribe. That way you can get it delivered directly to you, whether it's through Google or iTunes. And you can also communicate with us, TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. And with that, we welcome in the Hall of Fame manager, Tony La Russa. After a little All-Star break, you're a career grinder. I know that. Did you enjoy any downtime? Do anything fun?
Yeah, the Red Sox ended up in Detroit. So then it was a short ride over to Cleveland. I usually, if it's close, I'll do a Q&A at the Fan Fest. And I did one with Tony Oliva that I have done before that I really enjoy. And then the next one was Jim Leland. So that was a lot of fun. I didn't stay for the home run contest. I flew home where I was greeted by, pleasantly by my wife and children and ecstatically by my dogs and cats.
I've noticed a theme over the years. The dogs and cats, always the happiest to see.
Nuts about me.
Let's get into some baseball topics. And this one happened right before the break, but then sort of percolated again with the Astros and Angels playing each other. We had the collision at the plate. Obviously, Jonathan Lucroy is out several weeks, and then the Astros player, Jake Mariznick, gets hit with a two-game suspension. For years, really, now, maybe the last decade almost, we've been talking about collisions at the plate. Joe Torre and the league office have tried to clarify the rules. How did you see the play, and is it possible that a guy can be wrong even if he wasn't being malicious?
First of all, you can't let that rule be subjective. And hey, I think in this case, he was thinking, and he just got caught up in the moment. It's white or black. And if you're not sliding right at the plate, and there's an opening, and there's any kind of deviation, and you smack the catcher, then you made a big mistake. It's a very important rule. It was never a rule for a long time, but there was a certain bunch of us. I remember when I first started managing the White Sox, and Carlton Fisk, the great catcher, came over. And he would be to the side of the plate because he had gotten wrecked at the plate. And I went, whoa, that's a very smart way to go about it because we don't want to lose a catcher. So same thing in Oakland with Steinbeck and then later on with Matheny and Yachty. We always taught before it became a rule, look, it just give them a piece of the plate, and if they come after you, then they're taking a cheap shot. So I think he made a, you just got to know you can't do it, and it's important to have that kind of consequence if somebody does it for whatever their lapse was or intention.
Do you think across the league catchers are trained differently than they used to?
Well, no. Once they passed that, in fact, they waited a year because some of the veteran catchers said it would take a year to get ready. Well, I said right away, you go to spring training, you can in three or four drills. So, we had already taught that. In fact, I would argue with Yachty. Sometimes Yachty would get from the side, and then he wanted to take the brunt of the hit. I mean, it was an amazing one that I'm trying to remember the gentleman from Wigington hit him. He was with the Pirates, almost looked like he broke his neck. But we were always teaching that anyway. So it was very easy to teach it and make the adjustment, but it makes a lot of sense. The way I would argue it too, Martin, you allow a guy to blast a catcher. Well, why can't you, when you're running to first base, why can't you just plow him over? Why can't you touch him? Second base, you can't roll into him in the center field. Third baseman, if the guy's going to tell you, why don't you just knock him into the dugout? Well, you don't do that. So you got to protect the catcher. He's the most vulnerable, not seeing the guy coming, even though he has all the equipment to protect him.
And then when the Angels and Astros get together, Mariznick gets plunked, and then it elevates. I don't know if you saw it, but the Astros dugout's, chirping a fair amount, and Albert Pujols walks over kind of wagging his finger like, you guys, whether it was intentional or not, you cannot play that card and kind of gripe right now. I think everybody knew that was coming. It just, I don't want to call it the code of justice, but I think, doesn't Mariznick even know that that's going to happen?
Probably, and where did they hit him? They hit him in, they didn't hit him in the head, they hit him down the body, which is the real way to send a message. It's going to sting, it'll be an ouch, but you don't really face real danger like breaking your hand or smashing you in the face. And, I've always, really, just really objective. People say, well, why do you have that code? Well, let me tell you, if you don't have some kind of protection of your hitters, guys are going to try and intimidate your guys. And if you just allow hitter after hitter to get plunked and not have some kind of response, you know, you're going to lose your offense. So, you know, competitors will always try to intimidate the other side unless you stop them. And the way you stop them, you know, in a way that's not dangerous is that you just plunk them somewhere from the rib down. And I think Albert was exactly right. You know, he came across and said, hey, fellas. And with his stature, I think everybody said, well, let's take another look at this. Because, it, you know, put it this way, I've always looked at it too, Martin. If the Astros catcher had gotten clobbered by the Angel hitter, a runner, I'll guarantee you that they would be just as upset and would have had some response. So you got to look at it from both sides.
Yeah, the most upset I think I saw anyone might have been Yadier Molina, and he did it on Instagram and was really ticked off, basically on behalf of the catching fraternity, that, you know, basically saying you don't do that. And it was, I think Yadi's at a point in his career too, not that he doesn't care about what other people think within the game, but just saying, hey, this is, I strongly believe this. I don't know if you saw any of his comments, but basically saying catcher, he didn't say catchers unite, but that was sort of the theme.
I think there's a certain responsibility that attaches when you've been in the game and you have the respect that someone like Yadi does. You know, if a young catcher who's just in his first couple, 3 years says something like that, but hey, who, you know, you haven't paid any dues, but Yadi is, I mean, he's won the respect very hard-earned, well-deserved, and he's a very tough customer back there. I just said earlier that there were times that we used to get all over him for blocking the plate when he shouldn't. So I think it's very appropriate for Yadi to speak from his veteran position, and I think it's very appropriate for Albert to also lend his veteran, well-deserved respect and say, wait a minute, you know, you guys made a mistake. There was a very well-reasoned response, which was just a, you know, hit by a pitch where it didn't hurt, and now let's just play ball.
All right, a friend of Tony this week, and this is somebody you know real well, Mike Shannon turned 80. Fittingly, he turned 80 in the broadcast booth calling a Cardinals game. Give me some reflections over the years. I'm sure you were aware of his career and then when you got here, but I did get the sense you guys became pretty good friends once you got here.
No, we became very good friends, and yeah, there's so much to say about Michael. There's so much to the man. I mean, I know what a great athlete he was in several sports, but I remember when I first got there, he pulled me aside. He made sure I understood what the Cardinal franchise meant, what the history meant, what my responsibility as a manager, and it was very helpful. But from that, you know, for 16 years, we went out to dinner a lot. We palled around a lot. He's a very complex man. He's got a ton of interests, and, you know, to me, he would have celebrated his 80th birthday that morning. He probably got up about 4 or 5 in the morning and went out and shot some birds, and that night when it was over, he probably went out and got on a boat and went fishing till dawn. You know, he's had a life that all of us would love to live, and he's also a very intelligent guy with a great heart.
Yeah, he's packed a lot into those 80 years, and the commish, Rick Hummel, was telling me a story the other day, and he said, you know, people get sort of focused on the Shannonisms. He says some funny stuff. He said, don't misinterpret this guy's baseball acumen. Like, sitting up in that, and you'll hear it during a game. It was a couple of years ago even, I heard him say, I don't know why they won't lay one down. You put a bunt down, they're going to mess it up and throw it all over the park, and the next play they put a bunt down. I mean, there's a million times where he has said stuff like, what are they doing over here? You shouldn't be shifting that way, and then the guy hits it the other way. I think that's maybe a misnomer that people don't realize how good and smart he is with the game.
Absolutely right. I mean, he grew up as a Cardinal. He was part of all those teams as a young player that taught how to play the game properly, you know, how to play tough, how to play competitive, how not to make mistakes, and how to be a great teammate. And then he became the mentor later on. And all those years that he was supporting it, whether it was front office for a little while or mostly from the broadcast booth, you know, he's been all baseball. He pays a lot of attention. The thing I would add, though, Martin, is his intelligence, you know, is definitely because of his baseball experience. But he's a very intelligent man, very aware of a lot of things in life. There's a lot to Mike Shannon, and everything is to be admired and loved.
And he gives us a good jumping-off point, because he had a quote the other day that said, the game has changed more in the last 5 years than it did the previous 50 years. And I think he was referring, it was a quote to Rick Hummel, but I think he was referring to the shift, the analytics, maybe the launch angle and the home runs. And, you know, we've talked pace of play on this show probably a couple of times already, but I'm not entirely sure what he meant, but I think it has to do with some of the strategy that's gotten into the game. Do you get a sense of what he's saying?
Absolutely. I think it's a brilliant comment because it summarizes the fact that there are some drastic differences. Some, I think, make sense and are helpful. I actually think that replay, you know, done properly, not abused, has been a real boon to the game because, you know, the idea is if you make an out, you should be out. If you get a hit, you should get a hit. But a lot of the other stuff, I think the emphasis on getting the ball in the air and out of the park to the disrespect for the little game where you got to put the ball in play with two strikes. And the fact that there are more strikeouts than hits now, you know, is really not, it's not entertaining because baseball is beautiful when you see guys run the bases and you see defensive players make these athletic moves. So, and the more action you have and the quicker pace that it is, the more entertaining it is. So, yeah, I think for a while the, you know, here again, I say it carefully every time. I'm a big believer in information. I love analytics. They have a proper place, but you can't exaggerate what they can do. And proper balance, you know, they really complement the human part of the game, which is the scouting and the player development, the coaching, the strategy. So, you know, it's overwhelmed. And I think that the pendulum is going to come back the other way to where you have a proper balance.
And we had a radio segment with Andy Van Slyke. We were talking about the state of the game, and he said because of replay and everybody hits, you know, the button and waits for the review, he said, you don't even see good arguments anymore. Do you miss that at all? As a guy, I have your number at either 87 or 89 career ejections. You're fifth all-time. Bobby Cox, number one all-time. I think fans get a kick out of that when the manager is really mad and kind of goes out and gets into it with the umps. We see it a little bit, but do you think that's a part of the game fans miss?
I think to a certain extent that that's been a casualty of the replay system. Fans do like it. You know, I think there's another subject to get into someday is, you know, what's a proper argument? It better be sincere. You better not use it to fire up your team or fire up the fans. You know, that's really abusing the umpires. But, you know, those 80 ejections, you know, I managed 5,000 games. So, really, my percentage was pretty low because I was taught, you know, go out there with a real complaint and not anything invented or to protect a player. Well, one of the suggestions has been to maybe just use the replay of the last four innings of the game, not the first five. Maybe that would bring some of the arguments back.
And do you remember your first, your last? Are there some that stand out more than others in terms of times you were really honked off?
Yeah, I'll give you a couple real quick. The first one, I was with the White Sox as a baby manager. And, you know, I had played in minor leagues a long time, and a lot of the umpires who were coming up knew me as a player, you know, and I was a grinder who never, I respected the game and the umpires. So this day there was a, you know, I don't know if you remember Ken Kaiser, mm-hmm. ex-wrestler that was a huge presence and had a big attitude and, you know, and he didn't take any guff and he's umpiring behind the plate and we had known each other in minor leagues and he liked me and I liked him. So there was a play at the plate where I was sure he missed it and I came out there, you know, I'm arguing. He said, all right, Tony, you know, enough's enough, and, you know, no matter what you do, I'm not going to throw you out. So I said, well, what about if I throw my hat down and I kick the dirt? He says, well, if you do that, and I did that, and I was gone. And he was forced to throw me out. But probably my favorite St. Louis one quickly was in 2000 when Darryl Kyle won his 20th game. Yeah, in 2000 when we were in San Diego right there at the end of it was 2000 because it was the last road game on a Thursday, and we were coming home for the last weekend. I think maybe against Cincinnati or somebody. That's when Mike Matheny cut his hand. But we had a rally, and we were ahead, and Darryl was getting ready to win his 20th game, and John Schulock called a balk on Darryl that caused the tying run to come across. And I thought it was a real bogus call. I remember going out there, and you knew I was really upset because I would take my sunglasses, and I would throw them down and step on them. And I remember that got a lot of attention, and Schulock looked at me and said, "Must you are really upset, aren't you?" I said, "Yeah, man." You know, well, as it turned out, Darryl ended up the inning, and we came back with some pinch hits and won the game for him, and he won 20. So that was one of my favorites.
You know, the maddest I've ever seen you, and it wasn't in town. It was on YouTube or wherever, but it was you were with Oakland in Chicago. It was post-game, and I think Steinbach got hit in the head. And the reporter said something like, be a man, just talk about it. But it goes back to that other theme about guys getting hit in the helmet. Am I right? Is that the maddest you've ever been in uniform?
Yeah, it probably was because before that game, you know, Thigpen was their closer. And you know, he had a thing where they would throw up and in, and then he would really paint you away. So in our hitters meeting, we said, look, you know, you in that up and in, you You got to dodge it, and you got to stick your nose out over the plate and cover the other way. Well, he backed two of them back to back, and the second one, Terry was leaning over the, you know, top of the ninth inning in Chicago, got hit in the head. Man, I'm running to first base. I mean, it really got hit hard, and I'm really blaming myself, you know, for being part of him sticking his nose in. And I remember that Fisk, you know, who was an old teammate, started to pick him out at night and say, "Hey, you called it. Get out of here." And I remember picking up the bat. This was didn't show on that, but if you look at the replay, I picked up the bat and I fired it up on the screen going towards the press box. And people asked me what I did. I said I was throwing it at Reinsdorf because he fired me, which wasn't true. I was just upset. But when I get in the clubhouse, now I'm anxious to get a shower and go to the hospital. We're worried about Terry. And these guys, you know, we want more. And they were trying to bait me. You know, hey, what are you going to do tomorrow? What are you going to get even with? I wouldn't talk about it. I said, not going to talk about it. Yeah, I didn't see any question about the game, but I need to get out of here. And this one guy says, you know, older guy, be a man, be a man. After about the third one, I said, be a man. I mean, the man is laying in the thing, and, you know, and I kind of pushed my way out of there. Fortunately, Dave Stewart, who was walking by, came in and really stopped me. He just grabbed me and pulled me out of there and ended it. I got all kind of criticism because I was, you know, I was a bully with an older guy, and they didn't cover the five times that he challenged me and kept me from going to see Terry.
Somebody's rolling video, of course, and Dave Stewart kind of leads everybody out of there. And Dave Stewart is just fired up, and it's so funny. He's got that high-pitched voice, but he's using all these strong language, and the door closes, and there's just a usher or a guard there's at the door, and he just kind of real quietly says, maybe don't go back in for a while, guys. It's just really... All right, we'll do this. Quick break. Questions for Tony when we come back right here on Tony Talk. Be the Match, a great organization, now a proud sponsor of Tony Talk, our weekly visits here with the Cardinals Hall of Fame manager. Be the Match has gotten a lot of attention of late because Layla, the Blues superfan, has gotten a lot of attention. And her story, you know what it is, needed a bone marrow transplant. Here's what takes place. Every 3 minutes in the United States, someone is diagnosed with a blood cancer. They turn to the family first, but 70% of the time, the family isn't a match. In the case of Layla Anderson, the super fan for the Blues, she needed a bone marrow transplant. They went to the registry. That's what Be the Match is all about. They have the donor registry. She got the call. Her family found out she had a match. She had a donor. It saves lives. Be the Match is really a community. It's donors, it's volunteers, it's healthcare professionals, it's researchers. You can get involved, bethematch.org/give. You can make a donation so they can continue the great research they're doing, helping save lives. That's what Be the Match is all about. We appreciate them being a sponsor on Tony Talk.
Since 1960, serving the families of St. Louis, Marie Davila Senior Living. At the corner of Clayton and Wideman Road, the beautiful fountain greets you for the 22-acre campus. Full range of senior living. Independent living at the Villa Estate. Skilled nursing, memory care. They have it all. Spacious dining room, salon, transportation around town, exercise and pool, private rooms, hands-on care. You're not a resident at Marie Davila. You are considered a guest. Fred and Mary Kay Weezahan and their sons live on site. It is family run, and it has that family feel. You've heard Tony and I talk about how this was home for the legendary Red Shandings for many years. He was also on the board and helped the original owners start Marie Davila back in 1960. MarieDavila.com. We suggest you go online and schedule a tour.
It's Tony La Russa for my friends at Victory Men's Health, where they can help you be you again. If you're dealing with low T, ED, or vitamin deficiencies, make sure to see my friends at Victory Men's Health. They now have two locations, O'Fallon, Illinois, and the new addition in Town and Country. Both offices feel more like a man cave than a clinic. So get yourself back in the game by setting up an appointment at victorymenshealth.com.
One of our great sponsors on Tony Talk, Triad Bank, the neighborhood-friendly bank located in Frontenac on Clayton Road. They're just west of Lindbergh. Real easy access off Highway 64, get to Lindbergh, and you are there. Founded in 2005, wide range of commercial and personal banking services. And how about this? They actually have people behind the counter, people there ready to greet you, ready to help you. Business owners looking to expand, talk to the bank based in St. Louis. Those decisions are being made here. How frustrating is that? You're trying to get a loan for your business, and the decision is made in New York or Los Angeles, not with Triad Bank. You can find out more at triadbanking.com. home equity lines of credit, five-star rated bank, $360 million in assets. Check them out, triadbanking.com. Less than an hour from St. Louis, it's Greenville University. Founded in 1892, this liberal arts institution offers pre-med, offers online student involvement. Yeah, that's right. They'll get involved in local businesses, immersed in the community. A great little town of Greenville, Illinois, less than an hour from St. Louis if you're looking to get away for college, but maybe don't want to go too far. It's right up the road from St. Louis. Great professors, really a great experience. Kids involved in the athletics, but again, everybody is really immersed in what they're doing on the campus at all times. Greenville.edu for more information about this great institution.
Time now for your questions for the Cardinals Hall of Fame manager. You can always email us, TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. Question this week about lineup construction and whether people in St. Louis get more into it than anywhere else. And I think it's a great question. We do a lot of it on the radio, but we break it down. You get the sense in St. Louis that they were more into lineups than anywhere you had been. And also, are you scribbling on the napkin at night, and are you constantly kind of chewing on who should go where?
I think Chicago, the fans, the White Sox, I really liked being there with the White Sox, you know, the Southsiders. They're very passionate. That's why I think there's a lot of passion in a lot of towns. And part of the game is that, you know, it's really understood. It's hard to, if you're a football fan, it's hard for you to design a play or a defense for the NFL or even basketball. But baseball, man, you can make out a lineup. You can start a rotation. You can figure out a bullpen. I think that's part of the charm of the game. And definitely the difference was that I'd be in Chicago, and they would grab me by the neck and say, play this in St. Louis, because the Midwestern people are more respectful that, you know, hey, this is one you should consider if you care about winning. And they don't always drop that one on me. But I think that the fans being part of it and having knowledge and having good opinions is a really big plus for our game.
And a guy like Goldschmidt, some have said, well, hit him fourth. Others have said, no, he's a career three hitter. Do you think the player, I'm sure they all care about where they hit, but for some, is there more of a comfort level?
I think if you're successful, Martin, you better be careful. I know that McGuire, when he was with us, hit fourth the first few couple of games in 97 and did struggle. Then we moved him to 30, went crazy. So he was third the rest of the way because, you know, he was superstitious. And I think we all should like the big slugger hitting the first inning because he may do something to get you ahead. Same thing with Albert. Albert could hit anywhere, but third was best. I think the point to make, though, if a guy is struggling, sometimes a change of scenery is very helpful, and there's nothing that you can do better for a hitter than to maybe move him into that two spot with a real good hitter behind you where he's got the responsibility to get on base, but he knows that the pitcher has to throw him strikes. So I believe that, you know, you can be smart about changing your lineup just to give the guy a different, refreshing look at what his responsibilities are.
As someone wondering, were you ever on the same field as Bob Gibson? Would you have ever faced him? And I was trying to do the math here. I don't know. Would you have ever been on the field at the same time?
I think, and I'm sure there are records that could prove this right or wrong. My mind, you know, I was a young player with the Kansas City A's, which trained in Bradenton. And I went to spring training there, 63, you know, 66, 67, 68. And then that was our last one. Then we went to California. So somewhere around 67 or 68, I believe I took an at-bat against Bob, and I hit a little bloop pop foul that I think the catcher caught barehanded. It was so weak. I do think I took an at-bat against him, and I do know that I was very scared. And he looked at me and says, hey, don't worry about you. I'm just going to throw it right down the middle. You want me to tell you what's coming? Because you can't do anything with it. And he was right. We're all sending our very best to that great, great man.
Yeah, and I said a lot of great stories right now. As he battles pancreatic cancer, he's in chemotherapy, and I think everyone's reaction is the same. If anybody's going to be tough as nails and give it their damnedest, it's going to be Bob Gibson. Hey, we close out each week with Redbird Roulette, and this guy was one of my favorites. Wasn't here long, but sort of this trade deadline, late acquisition theme also this time of year. Will Clark came along in 2000. And in the media, we had always heard, boy, this guy's real prickly. But he was wildly entertaining. Could be a little prickly, but was a lot of fun to be around. What are your Will Clark recollections?
Well, I thought he was delightful. First of all, you know, when I was in the American League, he was in San Francisco, so we played against him. But we were, you know, in spring training, so he didn't have that real intense, if you do something good, you're going to hurt us. It was just spring training. So got to know Will, really appreciated his skills, and he had a lot of skills. I also know that there was a history with the Cardinals from the slide and some bad blood, you know, from playoff experiences. We got him, another one of Walt Jocketty's trades at the deadline, because Mark got hurt, and it ended up being a, well, it ended up helping us win the division and sweeping the Braves to get into the championship series. But I remember when he first came over, he was concerned about what the Cardinal fans, how they would respond to him. And, you know, because now he had a different uniform, I think they embraced him right away, and more so every time he got a big hit. But he had a couple of things, yeah, I'll say it very quickly. He just had so much personality. And one of the things he did as a veteran, you know, he made sure the rookies paid their dues. So J.D. was on our team, and whenever we won a game, J.D. would have to bring him a couple of Bud Lights. And my favorite was one time he came to the mound when I was getting ready to, you know, bring in a pitcher, and still there when I handed the ball to the pitcher, and this pitcher, I'm not going to say who it was, a young guy, boy, his eyes were just like, you know, deer in the headlights, classic. And Will said, can I say something to him? I said, yeah, real quick. He says, breathe, man, you got to breathe. In other words, you know, you could tell that he was forgotten to breathe. He was so scared. And it's really his wonderful advice. If you want to relax, just take a deep breath. But, you know, he said it, and you know, I remember I tried hard not to laugh there on the mound, and the pitcher looked, and the hitter, I remember the pitcher just said, hey, yeah, okay. I think it helped him. That's Will Clark.
He was so much fun, and God, it seems like he homered every game and wasn't necessarily a huge power hitter, but for that stretch, he was had some huge hits. And to his back, your voice, that was pretty darn good. Maybe you ought to imitate people. That was pretty good because I can still hear him. It's right before the Braves series, and our friend Frank Cusimano and I, we're standing there, and we're doing a quick media scrum get-together with Will Clark, and he said, Will, give us an idea. Your career, Maddox, Glavine, and those guys. And he said, how have you hit him? He said, pretty good. You should probably look it up. And that was the end of the soundbite.
I remember it was him and Jim Edmonds. The two of them were responsible for us scoring enough runs to sweep those guys.
Yeah, he had some big hits, and then he retired right after that, so his last career at bat would have been as a Cardinal. Hey, Tony Talk each week presented by Victory Men's Health, Triad Bank, Be the Match, Marie Davila Senior Living, and our friends at Greenville University. I'll close with this story. We mentioned that each week now Walt Jocketty listens and Costas has listened. Ben Fredrickson is a columnist for the Post-Dispatch. I see him in the clubhouse the other day, and he said, hey, you got me out of a speeding ticket. And I said, all right, tell me how. And he said, I'm riding home. He said, it was late after the game. And he said, you and Tony had done the segment all about Albert Pujols. And he said, I'm listening to it before that series begins. And he said, I'm driving home. I get pulled over. And he said, the police officer said, were you not paying attention? How fast are you going? He said, I'm going to tell you the truth. He said, I'm listening to a podcast with Tony La Russa and Martin Kilcoyne. And the cop said, oh, I like those segments too. And he said, next thing you know, he got a warning, and so this is the power of the show. He did not get ticketed because the officer said, oh, I listened to those too.
Well, that's typical St. Louis, and that's just great. I've said you before, you know, I really enjoy this show, so I hope the fans do.
All right, Tony, we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, thank you.